Hour number three on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, The Game on this Tuesday. Hope you're having a great day so far. He's Big Joe. I'm Chase McCabe, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier. On the ones and twos, Mike Tomlin out as the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So we're following that. What's next for him? But we'll talk a little racing, a little college football now with our buddy Ryan McGee from ESPN, who joins us now. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm working on some stuff for game day about Miami. Like I didn't realize this. Three of Miami's five national championships were won at the old Orange Bowl. Like they won the Orange Bowl, and so this is a chance for them to do something kind of old school. But yeah, that's a long way of saying I'm working, but I'm getting ready to go down to the game, which I'm fired up about.
Well, that is going to be really cool. I'm going to be completely honest with you. One of the reasons we're having you on today, I saw your tweet of Ryan Blaney and the caption, which read, "Big thanks to Ryan Blaney for leaving the 1897 spring training game between the Cleveland Spiders and the Boston Beanaters to attend today's NASCAR announcement." I laughed very hard at that. So well done, my friend.
Thank you. No, it was the truth. And, you know, Blaney's got a baby at the house. And you know, anybody that has kids knows you don't really shave the first 6 months, but Roger Penske makes him shave. Like once he officially becomes official, like, all right, I got to go to work in February. Roger Penske likes everybody clean shaven. It's like the Yankees back in the day. So yeah, he's getting as much mustache as he can get in. But yeah, that thing was straight off a Pringles can.
It is fantastic. Hey, Dale Earnhardt would be proud of that mustache. That's on par for sure. So what do you think about the new old format, essentially going back to the chase that we had starting in 2004? Jimmy Johnson certainly was successful with it, and that's how NASCAR is going to crown their champion moving forward.
Yeah, and Jimmy's the reason, quite honestly, that they changed it, because you know, he just kept killing everybody in the old chase format. And so, like, we have to do something different. And what fans kind of forget now is they wanted something different because they were all tired. I mean, you remember, everybody got sick of Jimmy winning all the time. But I think it's great. I think it's interesting. It's kind of funny that they're going back to the old chase system because, I mean, I'm old enough to remember when everybody complained about that. And now everybody acts like, you know, it's the solution. And I think it is. You know, it's the problem we saw, and it had always been an issue in the past, or close to an issue in the past, but when Denny Hamlin had what might have been the best season of his career last year and dominated the championship weekend, I mean, from the time they unloaded the cars on Friday, he was the fastest car there, and then for a caution flag to cost him everything that he had done throughout the course of 36 races, you know, with basically, what, a lap to go, that didn't sit well with anyone, including, you know, the guy who won the championship. You know, I talked to Kyle Larson, I remember, on Monday morning, right after he won the championship on Sunday night, and he goes, "I'm going to see Denny later today. I don't know what to say to him," because everybody agreed. You know, so I think that, you know, and I was in the meeting. Look, so when we first had the first initial, like, committee meeting back in February at Daytona, I was in the room when Mark Martin just teed off for 10 straight minutes about, I talk to old school race fans and they just want to go back to the old, you know, point system. And I don't think that was the answer, like one through race through 36, but having some sort of postseason, in addition to a 26 race regular season, but getting rid of all the gimmicks, I think that's a pretty good compromise. And Mark Martin said it during the announcement yesterday. You know, hopefully this will bring, you know, some of the old school fans that it got irritated with the way it is now. The eliminations are gone. And now we just have the old school chase.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I think it was the perfect compromise. And I feel like NASCAR is in a very interesting place now. Post-lawsuit, and sure, there's some hurt feelings on both sides, but I think ultimately they did what needed to be done, and that's figuring out a settlement and how they can move forward. How do you see the sport changing now that that is all behind them?
Well, it just was so tense. You know, if you took last season and just did like the blind taste test, like this is what happened in the 2025 season, I think most people would look at it and go, man, that's pretty good. I mean, you know, we had some unbelievable finishes and had a great championship race and a lot of different winners. And it just, on paper, it was a great year. No one's going to remember it like that, because when you went to the racetrack, particularly the second half of the season, it just got super, super tense. And the reason was because everyone knew the lawsuit was coming. And I think that most people thought that it would be settled by the time we got to the – but it overshadowed the championship. And the conversation wasn't Denny Hamlin could finally win a championship. The conversation was, man, what if Denny Hamlin wins a championship while he's suing NASCAR? And so I just think everybody's relieved that's over. And everybody's kind of mad that it even got to trial, because if it doesn't get to trial, then the texts don't get out. And, you know, Richard Childress isn't embarrassed, and now he's not mad. It just got so contentious that I think there's a lot of relief that it's over. And you saw that during the announcement. And then on top of all that, Greg Biffle dies, right?
Right.
And so I think you saw yesterday the look on everyone's face was, man, you know, we're finally doing what Jim France talked about when they walked out of the courthouse, you know, a month ago, which is let's start talking about racing again. And I'm hoping that by the time we get to Daytona here in just a few weeks, then we'll just be talking about racing and, you know, get through media day and then get on with racing.
There certainly, you know, is discussion, and I'm with you. I'm surprised that it ever got to trial and it didn't need to. But something needed to happen, in my opinion. Like, nothing against the France family. The France family is the reason there is NASCAR and have done so much for the sport. But, you know, I agree. The teams deserved more of the pie. The drivers deserve, you know, more decision-making. So it was kind of a necessary evil to hopefully – send the sport in a better place. It's just now, how do they all work together to do that?
Yeah, and I hate that Steve Phelps got sacrificed in this.
Me too, because Steve's a good guy.
He's a great guy, and the reality is that if Steve had had his way, I wrote this in the column, you know, that I wrote about, you know, what we learned the day that the trial ended, which was, you know, Steve Phelps had his way, this would all been done a long time ago. But the reality is he couldn't do but so much because Jim France wouldn't let him do it. And so, you know, but that being said, those texts were terrible and mm-hmm. it was a bad idea. And, you know, we'll never know the context of it. Was that at 2 o'clock in the morning with a bottle of wine? I have no idea, but it was ill-advised. And what I hate is that Steve is the guy who got rid of the Confederate flag. Steve is the guy that brought NASCAR back more before any other major league sport during COVID. And Steve is the guy that modernized NASCAR and pushed it into the future. And now, you know, he's going to be remembered for those texts. And that's, you know, he shouldn't have done it, but I hate that that's where it was left. But I'm with you. I think that, you know, the good that came out of it is that, yes, I believe that. I didn't understand why the charters weren't permanent, you know, and now they are. And I agree. I've told the story many times, but back in the 90s, man, when I was first doing this, the saddest thing I've ever seen that wasn't, you know, like a physical death, you know, injury on the racetrack was watching Ricky Rudd and Bill Elliott and Jeff Bodine and Bobby Allison and Cale Yarborough and all these guys, you know, auction off their lives for pennies on the dollar because what they had built wasn't worth anything. And that's what the charters are. And so I have always supported that, and I supported the fact that I thought this should be permanent. But, you know, it had to get ugly to get there, but now we're there, and hopefully the sport's better off for it.
Ryan McGee is on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Ryan, what years were you at Tennessee?
I was there for the Johnny Majors coup d'etat. I was there about my senior year was 93. I was at the Vanderbilt game Thanksgiving weekend. I saw Heath Shuler. I hadn't seen Heath in forever, but that was my quarterback. And so it was good to see all those guys. But yeah, Heath and I were laughing about, you know, we start talking about the 90s and people act like we're talking about, you know, when we play with Bronco Nagurski.
You know, what's funny is that like all my friends went there in the late 80s, early 90s. And I tell people they don't understand me, Ryan. I'm like, if I had a quarterback, one quarterback in college to take, give me Andy Kelly all day long. And they look at me like I'm crazy. And I loved Andy Kelly.
Yeah, no, AK was my guy. In fact, my senior year, I worked for the football team. I worked on the video crew. I worked with Barry Rice and Lincoln, those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And so we had a football crew intramural team. And it was the equipment guys and the, you know, the trainers and us. And we walked out on the field my senior year, and Andy Kelly was our quarterback because AK was playing arena football.
Right.
And he was a grad assistant. And so, when we walked out on the field, you know, and the Sigma Chi's thought they were going to whip us, and we had the Cotton Bowl MVP with us. I think they realized they probably didn't stand a chance. But yeah, no, Andy, I will say this, I also like my chances if I'm throwing it to Alvin Harper and Carl Pickens.
Oh, all day long.
But AK was the man, and people, I tell Shuler this all the time. Shuler, he to me is the perfect example of what I call a pre-internet guy. If Heath Shuler played now, like with the internet, he would break the internet.
Oh.
But people don't remember him like I think they should. Same with Carl Pickens. They don't remember him like they think they should because they played right before the internet became a thing.
Give me the Heath Shuler game at Georgia 92 all day long.
Oh, it was that game changed my chemistry, man. And it was so when I was in school, Tennessee was in an 8-year losing streak to Alabama, but we started that decade plus streak against Georgia, and that was back in the days where I think Vandy and Kentucky neither one had beaten Tennessee since the early '80s. So it was a good time. And Coach Majors was my guy. When Coach passed away a couple of years ago, I wrote a column about the fact that I was really lucky because I worked for the football team for 2 years and I was on the offensive tower every day shooting practice.
Oh, man.
And that was Coach Major's tower. And so every day, man, Coach Major's, Ryan, how'd you do on your history test? Are you still dating that girl from Gallatin? Like every single – what game's your dad reffing this weekend? I mean, Coach Major's was my coach, man, and I miss him.
Yeah, he was great. I did a Jack Daniels barbecue tasting. Ryan, it was me, him, and Guy Fieri at the same table.
Are you kidding me?
And Johnny was fascinated by Guy Fieri's hair, and he kept asking me, what the hell do you think he put in his hair? And I'm bald, and I'm like, Coach, I don't know. He's like, I probably shouldn't be asking you. I'm like, yeah, you probably shouldn't. But he was fascinated by Guy Fieri.
The least surprising part of that sentence was that it was a Jack Daniels event and Coach showed up.
Right? To do all that. I want to ask you, though, you mentioned earlier when you came on talking to Chase about the Orange Bowl. Like, are you doing there's a great Facebook page called Ghosts of the Orange Bowl. It's all these great pictures and videos from the Orange Bowl from the 50s up to the time the Dolphins left in 86. I'm fascinated by that stadium, and I'm curious, what story are you doing about that?
Well, it's kind of what you're talking about, which is kind of educating people on, and again, I knew that Miami had won Orange Bowls in that stadium, but I didn't realize 3 of their 5 national championships were clinched at home. But I was there on a night. It's funny. So you guys know this. My dad was a college football referee forever, and he worked the 1990 Orange Bowl, and Colorado was number 1, and Notre Dame beat Colorado in the Orange Bowl. And the craziest thing about that night was that the stadium was packed with all these Miami Hurricanes fans. And all of a sudden, randomly during the game, these cheers would go up in the stands. And it was all the Miami fans who were listening to the Sugar Bowl. Because Miami was playing Alabama in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
So they were there to root for Notre Dame because they needed Notre Dame to beat Colorado, who was number 1. And then, meanwhile, Miami was beating Alabama in New Orleans. But the Orange Bowl was amazing. But, man, it wasn't fancy. Like, it was kind of a dump. I remember we went out on the field the morning of the game with Dad, and it was really just dirt that was spray-painted green. There wasn't a lot of actual turf on the field because they played high school championships there, and there was a soccer team there and all that stuff. But it's kind of like Shea Stadium. All Mets fans say, it's a dump, but it's our dump. And there's a lot of Miami fans that still wish they played in that stadium. But now that's where the Marlins ballpark is. It sits right on top of the site there in Little Havana where the Orange Bowl was.
Yeah, it's crazy. You drive by there thinking, what in the world? How was that? And you look at it and you stare at it. And same spot. So you're right, same spot.
Yep. I'm real fortunate. I get to write these essays for College Game Day every week, and a lot of times they let me lean into my history nerd, aspect of my life. And so that's what I'm writing about is, that the magic of that. And so, if this is going to be a true old school Miami national championship, it would make a lot of sense if they won it, not at the old Orange Bowl, obviously, but if they clinched it at home.
Who wins it in your opinion?
Well, I said all that, and now I'm just going to tell you Indiana's probably going to win. but it's interesting that there's a home aspect to that as well, because, you know, for folks that don't know, I mean, Fernando Mendoza grew up going to Miami games, you know, at, you know, what I still call Joe Robbie Stadium, Hard Rock Stadium. His dad played high school football there at Miami Columbus with Mario Cristobal.
Wow.
They were high school teammates. Yeah, and so, and it's going to be interesting because – the crowd will be a home crowd for Miami, but it will also be a home crowd for Mendoza, who grew up 30 minutes south of the stadium. So I just – and listen, until – it's the Ric Flair line, right? You know, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And right now, Indiana's just – I mean, it's been a while since we've seen a team go through a postseason like this. And it's a great story. It's still, honestly, it's like Diego Pavia, right? It's hard for me to wrap my brain around – the number one team in the country and the Heisman winner being at Indiana, because our whole lives, everyone's whole lives, Indiana's been terrible at football. The losingest team in the history of college football until this year. And then the only reason that they're not still on the list because they haven't lost a game this year. So it's hard to wrap your brain around it, but, man, it sure is fun to watch.
It's going to be a fun one for sure. And then we're, what, about 6 weeks or a little bit less away from Daytona. So it's almost here.
I booked my Daytona travel right before you guys called. So it's I'll be going back. And, yeah, there's a – you know, don't tell anybody, but I'm going to go to the National Championship game in a few weeks later. I'm going to go to Daytona, and they pay me in American dollars to do it. But don't tell anybody.
I know.
I don't want that secret to get out.
It's a good gig. Well, there's a good chance we'll see you in Daytona, so I look forward to catching up.
Yep, I look forward to it. I'll be there.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Ryan McGee, ESPN, also Marty and McGee on ESPN Radio and the SEC Network. Always enjoy our conversations with him. We'll come back with more. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.